Welcome to tonight's show, everybody. This is Sharon Peters from Montreal, Canada, and this is the Women of Web 2.0 webcast for February 20th. We have an exciting guest lined up for tonight. We have Julie Lindsay coming at us all the way from Bangladesh, and it's so exciting to have an international guest with us. I'm really pleased about that. Our theme tonight is global projects, and we'll be discussing in particular the Flat Classroom Wiki project that Julie and Vicky Davis have been working on, and as well as opportunities for other global projects that exist and that maybe will exist potentially in the future. I will go ahead and introduce my partners here too, Cheryl, Shen, Jen, and Vicky. So I'm going to ask Cheryl to speak up first. She's on her week-long break, I believe, this week.
Right. For any people in the chat room from Maine, like Michael, we're on break, and it's a great time because it's 31 inches of brand new powder, and yeah, I'm exhausted. I've been every day from 8 until about 1:30 and then just crashing, so this is going to be, if I start yawning, you'll know why. Okay. Can I do my wow right
yes,
now?
Yes, please. Go ahead and do your wow of the week. What's your wow of the week?
My wow of the week, and I can't remember if I did this last week when we were chatting. It's called Chinswing, Chinswing. And it's a way to create a conversation when you're online asynchronously. You can register for Chinswing, and you can create a question or a comment or start a conversation. And as people register, they can be become part of that conversation. So it streams multiple responses. Very, very cool.
I think I saw Dave and Jeff experimenting or hyping that the other night in EdTech Talk on the Sunday night thing. So that was my first experience with it. What is it called again?
Chinswing. And it's in the chat.
Okay. I would say Gesundheit, but okay. Okay, we'll move on to Vicky. Vicky Davis.
Hello, this is Vicky Davis in Camilla. Am I coming through there, Sharon?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's been kind of eventful. We've been doing a lot of network work at our school, and for those who know me, they know I'm a full-time classroom teacher and network administrator, so it's been kind of nutty for me at our school. But I've had a couple of wows. One was I did a post last week on how to volunteer via Skype and how businesses should volunteer and stop complaining about how textbooks have holes in them and are including things like nanotechnology and other things that need to be there. And instead, the businesses should take time using Skype or other voice over IP tools to help fill in the gaps in education. And I've had a lot of kind of interest going on behind the scenes with that and business people wanting to talk about it, and I think that's kind of exciting. But my real big wow of the week came as I was in Second Life learning about it, and I do want to say that, you know, Second Life I don't think is ready for prime time in education at all, and I would discourage people from going into Second Life with an educational project. It's not ready yet. But I started thinking about Web 3.0, and I really think that it's not going to be Web 3.0, it's going to be Web 3D. I really think that's the next evolution of the web, and that it's already here with Xbox Live and the PlayStation 3 Live and a lot of things that are happening. So I'm working on a big blog post about Web 3D. So that's kind of my wow of the week, and I've been studying about it in my spare time, haha. And I really think there's a lot of potential, but I think that educators are going to have to get together and kind of say, this is what we need, because right now we really don't have the platform to use yet. So that's my wow of the week, and I guess we're on to Jen.
That's me, Jennifer from Corona, California. A couple of big things to brag about first, and then I'll do my side of the week. Four Women of Web members were winners of the Best Buy Teach Grant. $500. Cheryl L., Bob Sprankle, Janet Barnstable, and Jennifer Wagner each got $2,500.
Wonderful.
And as of 10 minutes ago, my newest online project has 10,524 students involved.
Oh, my
God. It's the first time I've ever hit over 10,000, so this is exciting for me. 357 classes have registered so far. I got mentioned on Kinder Corner, and I got mentioned on Busy Teacher Cafe. So I am getting a lot of hits. And so it's been exciting. It's been fun, though, working a 40-hour week and trying to juggle projects and having to be on the road longer than I used to be. But it's been fun, and it was good to hit the 10,000 mark. Anyway, my site of the week just came a few moments ago from Kathy Shields. We were having a little bit of Second Life discussion, and she was talking about a brand new site that she just heard about a couple of days or weeks ago. It's called Kanava. It allows you to have communities so that you can invite people in to join your community. So it's not like Second Life in that like you can go everywhere, and Vicky will be proud of this. The guy who designed it is from Georgia Tech.
Huh.
Anyway, that is something that I'm going to invite us all to check out. It looks a little bit more user-friendly, a little bit more safer for kids. And the fact that you invite people to come in really is going to give you the power to maintain safety, and which is one of my biggest things, because I realize that Sharon and Vicky are always dealing with high schoolers, and I'm always dealing with kids who are usually younger than 10. So that's why we're seeing the differences in Second Life, and the power and the possibilities of Second Life are totally different for someone who, you know, hasn't even lost all their teeth yet, and you know, someone who's thinking about going to the prom. So anyway, so if you have time, check out that site and drop an email to all our people. And yes, I'll say it really quick before we go on to Julie, is we want to say thank you for Kathy Shields tonight for covering for Cheryl. Cheryl is just going to get to sit back tonight and enjoy tonight, and Kathy Shields is doing our streaming and our podcasting for us. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
Yes.
And on to Sharon Peters.
Yeah. Okay. I've got a little bit of a list here myself, and I was at the Illinois Online Conference last week, and that was good, and I had some good feedback from my presentation on social networking and for professional growth. And I do want to carry that forward and show people the results to my survey, and thank you very much if you took my survey. It was very, very valuable. I've arranged to have the president of Teachers Without Borders Canada visit our school next week as she visits Quebec. So I dropped a link to that in the chat for those who are interested in what Teachers Without Borders stands for. And I think I'm really excited about an initiative like this, because it's addressing the digital divide. And I think we're all aware that there are so many nations around the world that simply don't have the kind of access to technology that we have, and don't have access, therefore, to the connecting power of the internet and of education in particular. So I'm kind of excited about that, to hear the possibilities. I had a Skype chat with three of my students who are in Australia right now, and that was really great. That was really fun today. My students got to chat all the way to Melbourne, Australia. And the other night I got to visit Second Life too, with a bunch of ESL teachers from around the world, talking about how Skype can be used as an environment to promote language and culture training. And it was really starting out at the ground level, really an initiative that's starting very basic, but it was just a fascinating time for me to see how other educators are seeing the potential, as Vicky was saying earlier, of 3D, of the virtual world. And so thank you for that new Kanava. I love that.
That's really cool, Jen.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a peek at that. Yes, tonight is our theme is global projects tonight, and we do have Julie Lindsay along with us. I think I'll eventually mention a few of the other project portals that exist, and some of the other pioneers in global projects that should be heralded as well. But I'd like to introduce Julie Lindsay, and you know, maybe the more appropriate person would be Vicky to get into details with how she and Julie established a relationship recently to work on the Flat Classroom Wiki project. I think this is kind of unique, because I think I'm the only person, possibly,
in the chat room and involved in this that has met both Vicki and Julie face-to-face, though not simultaneously. So that's kind of neat. I met Julie at NEC 2006 last year in San Diego, and I had the great pleasure and privilege of attending her session on podcasting Bangladesh, and was so inspired by it. I just thought it was a terrific presentation. I learned a lot from it, took a lot of notes, and I think I even reported for eSchool News on that particular presentation. And Vicki Davis I met more recently in November at the Georgia Educational Technology Conference. So it's been kind of neat to be able to talk to both of them like this and watch them work together. So Vicki, why don't you kick off with introducing how your relationship with Julie started, and then interview Julie a little bit.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say that compared to Jennifer and you, Sharon, and I know you, Cheryl, have done some things. You know, this is really my first move into global projects. Julie's already done quite a few herself. So, really, I'm kind of more of a beginner compared to them, and I hope that all of you, Jen and Cheryl and Sharon, that you'll really interject tonight because y'all really have a lot of experience with running these types of projects. But actually, Julie gets all the credit for getting us together. I did a blog post about a section of The World is Flat where Thomas Friedman had written about CQ plus PQ is greater than IQ. That stands for curiosity quotient plus passion quotient is more important than intelligence quotient. And my students have reflected and written about it. And Julie had read it and commented back and said, I think we have kind of a potential match here for something I'm thinking about doing. And I had a wiki project planned for my semester assessment. And we just really had a curricular match there. And as we started talking, I really felt sort of a kindred spirit with our passion and work ethic and that sort of thing and what we wanted to accomplish together. So, Julie, you've done a lot of things besides this, I know, with Reuven in Israel and in some other places. Mm-hmm. Do you want to tell us about some of the projects that you've done, Julie?
Sure. Hi, everyone. Yes, Vicki, I think the reiterate what you were saying then. I think the flat classroom project came along just the idea came just as I was reading the book and talking about it with my students and you were discussing it with yours, and it's just a matter of just finding that match and that other person in the world who you can connect with. But I've been doing global projects probably for about 10 years now, telecollaborative projects. In fact, I started, we were just talking before, apparently Sharon has some students based at my old school in Melbourne, which is very interesting. I used to teach for many years at a school called Eltham College, which is a private school, K-12 school in Melbourne. And my first ever telecollaborative project was at Eltham College in 1996, I think it was. It was one of the very first Global School Network cyber fair projects. And I had a group of students. I was actually running a student radio program at the time. We were on community radio. We did 1 hour of community radio every week. And I tied it in with that. And we did the theme environmental awareness. So we created this website on environmental awareness in a sort of outer suburban suburb of a fairly large city. And we actually got to the final few winners, and remember we all got to school at 5 o'clock in the morning. Your parents, students, teachers were all there at 5 o'clock in the morning to tie in with the US time. We had Al Gore speaking, we were streaming it through our audio, and to see who the final winner it was. And we're all, you know, very tense, but we actually ended up with a fourth place honourable mention, which was quite exciting. You know, back in 1996, when you think back, that was quite an exciting thing. And that was my first experience that showed me, you know, the power of these projects and the power to bring communities together and to bring all people involved in the learning process together for sort of a common goal. Am I still there?
You're still with us, yes.
Okay, right. so since then, I've been working with, well, on and off through the various countries I've moved to and worked in. In Zambia and Kuwait, I did learning circle projects with iEARN.
Okay.
And that's an organization really, really worth having a look at. In fact, what was it, about 3 years ago, two years ago, I think I did the IUN Master Teacher Certificate, which all the information is available on their website. If you go to the IUN, IEARN.org website and click on professional development, they outline all of their teacher certificates and professional development courses, and it's absolutely fabulous. You do this this course and you link up with other teachers around the world, and they have it very well designed. Their pedagogy is very good, so it's something that I would recommend people look at in terms of understanding how to set up and work through and finalise sort of a collaborative project. I do think, though, I just had another quick look at it this morning. I do think, though, IUN needs to perhaps come into the more into the 21st century and now embrace these Web 2.0 tools and encourage more people around the world to do this. However, I understand that IUN are working with so many different countries and so many different people that may have limited IT tools, so that they are trying to be inclusive. So and that's excellent as well. That's their main focus. You know, to be inclusive. So we need to remember that, you know, not everybody has powerful computers, and we struggle with our internet connection here too. But even with a small or slow internet connection, you can still do great things with projects.
And I just wanted to go ahead.
I'm sort of raving on a bit here.
No, I was just going to say wikis seem to be particularly flat and not heavy. And I know I've spoken with other partners around the world that appreciated that about the wiki in particular. So I just wanted to say that, you know, at least there's one Web 2.0 tool that isn't intensive and heavy and needs the broadband access. But go ahead. Sorry, I just want to interject with that.
Sure.
That note.
Yes, you're right. I agree. The actual website of the wiki is really designed to be inclusive, isn't it? It's probably the other multimedia artifacts that we add into that
right.
A bit heavy.
Right.
So let's see. Yes. So Cyber Fair since being in Bangladesh, we did another Cyber Fair that was 3 years ago. And it was once again in the environmental awareness category, and that was a fabulous project. I worked with grade 8 students on that, and it was just fabulous. We actually won first place that year in the environmental awareness category, so we were all really excited. And it was interesting because we actually went on a field trip for a day, which is very unusual here because it's a little bit tricky here sometimes politically, and also Dhaka is quite a challenging city. But I took the students out in a bus and we went on a field trip, and we were looking at, so see, Bangladesh has this amazing law that they've banned plastic bags. They're actually totally banned.
Wow.
So you're not supposed to be able to buy them or use them, and everything, you buy your groceries in jute bags or paper bags or whatever. So we went out, we were interviewing shopkeepers because we knew some of the shops that were still using plastic bags. And we went out and we interviewed them, and we talked to rickshaw people that we talked to. We've got these little taxis that use CNG gas because diesel is banned in the city. So we went and talked to the taxi drivers, and so the kids were talking in Bangla and we were taking photos, and it was such a wonderful experience to talk to the people on the street about their perception of environmental awareness and how they thought Bangladesh was developing. And then, because then we went to school and put all of this on our website and talked about it, and so it was quite an exciting project as well. So, and now of course Flat Classroom Project, which has been absolutely fabulous working with Vicky. I can't stress how exciting it's been and how wonderful Vicky is as a partner to work with from the other side of the world. And it's just been really great for my students and for us as a group.
Now, Julie, you're an international teacher. Will you tell us, you know, where you started in some of the places you've taught?
Sure, yes. Well, Melbourne originally, and then my husband and I answered an ad in our local paper that said, come and teach in the real Africa. So we sold all our stuff in Melbourne and went and taught in Zambia for 2.5 years, took our three-year-old daughter with us at the time. Then we moved on to Kuwait, so we're in the Middle East for 3 years. We were in the Middle East during fairly troubled times. We were there for 9/11, when 9/11 happened. We were there when the second war started 4 years ago. I actually brought Violet back to Melbourne, and John escaped for 3 weeks as well. So that was interesting. And then we've got these positions here in Bangladesh. And this is actually our fourth and last year in Bangladesh. And next year we're moving actually back to the Middle East. We're going to Qatar, which will be quite different to Kuwait, but it is still in that region. So another big change coming at the end of this year.
Wow. And I know you
were hard to know what to say, isn't it?
Well, you know, I have a lot of admiration for international school teachers, and I've known a few of them, and they're very interesting. And in fact, the lifestyle seems very appealing to me, because you get to see the world, and you get to teach in such an interesting environment, and you get an opportunity for your family to come along with you and see the world and experience things that I know in North America we tend to be quite ethnocentric, and I'm not sure how the Australians fair in that department, but it seems to me that traveling around has really augmented your own sense of cultural awareness and desire to open, flatten the walls of your own classroom so that it gives the opportunity for your students to see more of the world than just whatever country they're in.
I think so. I think as an international teacher, you know, I think perhaps I have a broader perspective on some things. In terms of Australians and Americans, you know, I think Australians are almost as insular as Americans, really. I mean, John and I both come from fairly large families, and, you know, they're quite amazed that we stayed out of Australia for 10 years. And when you're coming home, you know, come back to the real world, we're saying, well, it's too exciting. We don't want to come back. You know, this is our real world now. It's all out there just for us to be part of. So, you know, it's a matter of life choices, isn't it, really?
Do you want us to talk a little bit about the goals of the project?
Let's do that, yes.
Okay, why don't you start?
Yeah. Okay, well, the flat classroom project, we wanted students to be looking at the 10 flatness that Thomas Friedman wrote about in his book, The World is Flat. We wanted them to studying them, observing them. My class in particular is an information technology class at grade 11, which is the second last year before they finally leave high school. And I wanted them to not only studying those as part of their course, but to be using them, to become familiar with them, so to become familiar with Web 2.0 tools, to understand what virtual communication is, to get a you know, innate sort of understanding of ubiquitous computing, which my students had sort of a sense of. I mean, we have a laptop program at our school, we have a wireless network, we have things in place. You know, they all have mobile phones and etc. But to actually be said, well, what can we do with these in education? What can we do with these to actually communicate with someone else on the other side of the world, and to look at that and to actually put that into practice was one of the main objectives, I think, of the project. Would you agree, Vicky?
Yes, and I think the amazing thing is that even though we had the 10 flatteners, there was such an overlap between the flatteners in terms of how our world is changing. And, you know, unless you do a study like this, then you have to pretty much take what the media tells you about outsourcing and about the trends that are happening and the businesses going overseas from America and the picture that's being painted. And I think that you know, that fear approach that the media takes with this, it was very good for my students to see for themselves both sides of the issue. Why are these things happening? There's a very real business reason that many of these things are happening in our world, and how are they going to be able to be successful in the world in the future? And I think, and in fact, I know in several cases, it's going to affect the major that they have in college and the approach that they're going to take as they move, you know, forward in their lives, just being able to understand, you know, what it means. And it was really fascinating, too, for them, the students, to get to know each other. You know, Julie, I know at the beginning when our students, you know, my students talked about quail hunting and yours talked about, you know, how they speed, just different things, and they really realized, you know what, those, they're real people, but you know, that we're dealing with real people, and they're not so different than us. Because I think the media likes to paint a divisive picture somewhat in the United States between us and other cultures, and it was just very refreshing to see the sense of excellence and hard work and really the connections that the kids made. I really had a huge belief that in order, you know, it's one thing to study cultural awareness, which we do, you know, very well in the States. It's another thing to truly become culturally aware. And there's a big, big, big difference between those two things. And I feel like my students learned more in, you know, 2.5-3 weeks than they could have ever learned in any cultural literacy or, you know, international literacy type studies, just from relating to the students and how well that worked. What did you think, Julie?
Yes, no, I totally agree with that. The opportunity to actually, you know, look into other people's lifestyles and to see that, you know, essentially the students of this age, they all have pressure put on them for homework. Some of them rise to the challenge, some of them don't. They all have families with various commitments. They have certain lifestyles that involve certain requirements, and it is very, very similar, but at the same time different. So you look at these similarities, and you sort of think, oh well, yes, we're not that different. And then you start to look at the differences and say, oh well, that's interesting. That's, you know, they play a lot of football or whatever, and you know, we perhaps do other things here. It's quite, and we tend to perhaps overuse this word, but it's very much a flattener. And I really like the word, so I don't mind if I keep using it. But it's a very flattening experience. It's a real dose of reality, I think, because in a sense the world, it is a golf ball. We need to remember that, I think.
Yeah, and I think even things as small as the time difference, you know, we study about how the sun moves around the globe. But, you know, right now, this morning, you know, it's, what, 8:30 in the morning for you, Julie, right?
Yes.
And it's 9:30 at night, yes, for me. And just that whole idea of collaborating, as we studied about workflow software, how work can flow around the planet and how things, you know, work together, and then just understanding the difference in the time of day was very, still sometimes, I mean, this has been, what, a month and a half later, they'll say, oh, what time is it in Bangladesh right now? What are they doing? You know, and it's just amazing the different awareness that has happened from that.
And I'd say to them, well, you need to discuss that with your partner. Oh, well, they're in bed now, but when they get up, they'll see your message. You know? So that's sort of, they'll leave a message, they'll be fine. When they have breakfast, whatever, when they come to school, they'll see it and they'll be able to respond.
Well, my students would rush to get in by 7:30 so that they could try to catch your students, you know, while they were still, you know, awake and able to talk with them about things.
Right.
And,
yes.
You know, and the other thing I thought was really neat was how the students moved between all the Web 2 tools.
Mm-hmm. Well, we set up some things for them, but then they embraced their own, didn't they? I mean, we didn't necessarily set up MySpace, but some of them were using MySpace and other sort of IM tools that they just use every day anyway. So I know Casey and Cannell were using MySpace as a way of communicating, and some of the others.
And we really kind of, you know, pointed them in the direction and said, okay, here's what we want you to accomplish, and then they really took over and pulled in a lot of tools that, you know, we didn't really direct them to do, but it was easier for them to collaborate and work together, and they kind of just moved seamlessly between, you know, everything from Google Talk to Skype to MySpace to, you know, just about all these different tools, and I thought it was great from a critical thinking standpoint and a problem-solving standpoint for them to be able to select the variety of tools that they needed to use for whatever the task was at hand.
You know, in fact, I think they were not that comfortable with using the discussion tab on the wiki, I think, because I know there was more communication going on than we actually saw. And I'd say to them, well, you know, as part of your assessment, as part of the rubric, I need to see that you have been collaborating. They say, oh, but, you know, I've been talking to them, and we chatted last night, or we was in MySpace or whatever. And I said, well, you know, it's part of the assignment. I can't see that on the wiki, so therefore, you know, your marks or whatever, because I am assessing this, your marks will not be there. So maybe we need to think about that, actually.
Well,
the whole visual or non-visual sort of collaboration. Maybe it's more. Maybe we should base it more on their own written reflection or something, so they can describe how they actually collaborated.
Mm-hmm. Now, Simon mentioned in the chat room about inappropriate communication between students, and I'll interject, and then, Julie, if you want to interject as well. We didn't have any huge issues, but, you know, there are cultural differences, and really any interpersonal-type issues went directly to Julie or I. So I instructed my students at the beginning, okay, if you have any questions, if you have trouble getting up with your partner, we had a couple of people who had a difficult time connecting, and even it's more than netiquette. There's a definite cultural difference. Julie, do you want to talk about the male-female, you know, interaction thing?
Sure, yes. This is a Muslim country, though we're not fundamental Muslim here. But we had, there was just a little incident. Selma, one of my students, was chatting with her partner. Her partner was Colin, was it? I think Colin.
No, it was Matt.
Matt, that's right. Sorry, Matt. Yeah. And she came to school and they say, and she was talking to Shaquila, one of the other girls. Shaquila's going, you know, Matt was flirting with Selma. I said, what? what was he doing? And Selma says, it's okay, Mrs. Lindsay. I said, oh, okay. So anyway, I mentioned it to you, Vicky, didn't I? I said, oh, you know, I mean, the girls, it varies. You know, some girls are actually almost sort of Western in their approach, some families, but a lot of the families, it's fairly typical that the girls do not have the same sort of social life that girls in America would have. I mean, they tend to have their social life with their families. They would never be allowed to go out with a boy at this age, or in fact, probably never, in fact. A lot of marriages are still prearranged. So the whole interaction between boys and girls is quite different. But of course, ours is an international school, so they do have enhanced opportunities through activities at our school, and we do run it as a Western-type school. But it's just a little bit different, and it just flashed through my mind. Now, Selma mentioned that to her father, the whole thing would blow up in our face. But as it turned out, you know, it was okay, and I think Selma's family are actually okay. But I just sort of thought, oh, I probably should have preempted this a little.
Well,
anyway,
and interestingly,
you tell me.
Yeah, I talked to Matt about it, and you know, just talked about the cultural difference, and it's interesting because after we were through. All of the students learned from that. After we were through, when we went down to the local coffee shop to kind of talk about what we learned in this project, Matt said, I learned that when I collaborate, I must be a professional at all times.
Right, that's good.
And I said,
interesting.
Aha, that is, you talk about a lesson to learn. That is so important for him to learn. And you know, I just thought that was such a great lesson because, you know, it could have been a negative, but because Julie was so in tune with her students and because I have a good relationship with mine, I mean, it didn't blow up. It was no bad thing, but you really have to stay right in there with the students and listen and say, okay, what are they saying? What are they talking about? You know, and working together. And, you know, Sharon says she's nervous about, you know, outside the control of the teachers. And the real issue is that this was a asynchronous project. We were not in the classroom at the same time. So the only way for them to talk was really to talk in off times. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that, Julie? We really couldn't have had the project without somebody being at home.
No.
You know.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, and some people may have to do, you know, synchronous projects for that reason and say, you know, do North America and South America versus around the world. But I honestly think that the students are going to have to do this anyway. And I set my expectations very high for my students, as Julie does. And they know how they're supposed to act, whether I'm sitting there watching them or not. They know how they're supposed to act. You know, and I hold them accountable for everything they said. I told them that with this project.
It's a great experience.
Vicky and Julie.
Yes.
Sorry,
go on.
Are your students still collaborating?
Well, it depends on the student. Casey and Cannell, they're our winners. They are working on, Cannell has been editing and helping us, Julie and I have, Casey's writing an article for the Coming of Age 2 about social networking and how it can be used to teach from a student's perspective.
Oh, good.
And they've done some things. Now, Casey and Cannell, I think, keep in touch pretty well, don't they?
They do, yes. Yes, they've been in touch. So that's sort of an ongoing with that in the background. Since the project, we haven't been in touch sort of class to class as such. I think we've sort of moved on into our other another world.
Right. But there's still that connection that that's those two students that they've made that otherwise wouldn't have happened.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
And they just made such an interesting connection. The C team, they call themselves. Their first names and second names both start with C. It was quite amazing that they were put them together. That was Vicky who did that. She sort of put the C team together.
It worked out very well, and I think the others are, you know, they keep up with each other kind of through us. I know one of Julie's students had an accident, and my students keep checking on him and trying to find out how he's doing. So,
yes, he came back to school this week. He's okay.
Oh, wonderful.
He's still got his leg in plaster. We hoisted him up the stairs. We're on the second floor, top floor, actually, what do you call it? Third floor. So we had to hoist him up the stairs. but he's okay. But I think, Vicky, one of the most interesting parts of the project was the actual collaboration on the final student video.
Mm-hmm.
That each student, one of the requirements was that each student create a 4-minute personal video, but outsourcing some of the content where possible to the classroom on the other side. And that was successful in a lot of ways because it gave actually the students another chance to work with multimedia tools and also to look at video production and also to try and get a message across in that short space of time. So I think, you know, that's something that is definitely worth maintaining and solidifying in this type of project.
Now, don't you think, Julie, that time these students have a project like this, that they're going to really be up and running so much faster?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
I mean, my students say...
It was a bit of a shock to them at the time, yeah.
Yeah, my students say, give me another chance because I'm really going to be able to do it better this time.
Wow.
Because they kind of wandered, you know, the first week was kind of, you know, getting their bearings, and when they really realized what they were doing, they were so excited, and, I mean... We were there. It was really long hours. I know, Julie, you had Saturdays nights till 8 o'clock. They were so excited. They just wanted to learn and work and be there, you know, with us, you know, to get this project done.
Can you mention the evaluation of the project and the rubric you used as well as the judges that were involved in that?
Julie?
Yes, sure. Will I start, Vicky? we both created individual classroom assessment rubrics, and we Vicky actually put a bit of work into creating these, or starting with sort of the simplified rubric that we gave to the judges to use. For judging. We asked four judges from around the world, Terry Friedman from the UK, Jeff Utecht from Shanghai, Joe McClay from Melbourne, and Darren Karapatwa from Canada, to be our international judges. And they came fully on board. It was so impressive, their interest and their commitment to this project as well. And we gave them a chance to have a look at the rubric and to modify it if they thought it necessary. But it's so typical with rubrics when you work in a rubric, a criterion-based environment. You sort of look at it and you think, oh, yes, that looks okay, that looks fine. And then when you actually have to sit down and mark the work or assess the work or go through and fit it, there's always, I find, in my experiences, the rubric's never quite in the end. So I know that we've had many discussions now since the project as how we can fix up the rubrics and tweak them and make them more applicable to what we actually wanted the outcomes to be. But I think the rubric, of course, looked at assessing their collaborative skills, the students' collaborative skills, their ability to work with multimedia. The video was a component on the rubric. What else? Can you remind me what else is on the rubric?
Well, as we look back on it, I do think that there's some things that we'll probably do differently. Like Terry Friedman asked me a question, or asked both of us a question that has really stuck with me, and he said, we're collaborating globally on a project, but you both have different rubrics to judge your students. Is that fair? And, are we perhaps fitting this sort of thing into the old model of teaching? And, I've been really thinking about, how can we get around that? Because, I have the curriculum that I'm accountable for. You there?
Uh-oh.
Did we lose anyone?
We're okay. We lost Julie, and I'll go back and get her.
Okay, pull her back in.
Yeah.
But anyway, he talked about how, we're each accountable for the curriculum, but perhaps we need to really take a second look at how we are assessing these sorts of projects. So, Julie, you're back with us?
Yes, sorry, I missed a bit then. I dropped out. Yep.
Yeah, I was just talking about what Terry said, about the fact that you and I both had different rubrics, even though we had the same project. And I think probably, from my perspective, I think maybe next time, Julie and I do something together, or I do it with anybody, that we'll try to work together as much as we can to try to have a somewhat consistent rubric for the students. I think it'll just make it easier, because honestly, if you look at it, if you look at the NET standards that IST puts out, and the revised standards, our project met every single standard that they require, mm-hmm. or that they say needs to be taught, every standard in one project. So, I kind of think that my own worry about making sure I fit with the curriculum, maybe I was a little bit backwards in my thinking, because this project did meet the requirements. Well, what do you think, Julie?
Yeah, I think so. I think we could probably base it more on those standards or the updated ones, and work backwards from those to what the requirements are for our own classrooms, perhaps. It's interesting, the new proposed NET standards include more collaboration and more focus on, in fact, they even use the word, I can't remember now. Do they use the word global? They definitely use sort of collaboration, global collaboration, creativity, imagination, innovation, that type of emphasis on using technology tools. So the video project we did collaboratively just fits in. The whole project just fits in so well to the standards. It's a model project to exemplify these standards. So yes, I think you're right. We should be looking at that and aligning it more particularly with those standards in the future. Yeah.
And that's so important, because I think we need to be demonstrating that we have a great integrity with our curriculum as we do these projects, and they're not just fluff, they're not just little add-ons, they're not cutesy, with the wow factor. It's really good, solid content that is developing those skills for the 21st century learner. And it's so important that we show this to our colleagues, because I think too often they think of these projects as extras, or not having enough solid, meaty content to it.
Well, or they think, if the kids are having fun, they must not be learning anything.
That's right, too. I wanted to ask you about the hurdles or the barriers that you faced along the way, and what advice you would give to the people who want to embark upon their own global projects to overcome or to anticipate those hurdles or barriers.
You need to be... As a teacher, you need to be totally involved in the project and give it your full attention, which is why probably short projects are good, 3 to 4 weeks at the most, I think, is enough to run a project of this type of intensity. So you need to be aware that it is a total commitment to keep the ball rolling, because it's quite easy to ignore it for 2 or 3 days and then the ball gets dropped and then you're not quite sure where you are, and it's not worth. You know, you have to put that commitment to planning it and then the commitment to seeing it through, and that's quite important. And it is quite, you know, it's quite a big commitment that a lot of educators, I understand, are not prepared to do. Also, I think the type of project we did, matching the students up, you know, I think you need to, it's really hard actually, you can always say this in retrospect, you know, getting the right match. Allowing for example, we had students who weren't there at the start of the project, so allowing for perhaps them to join in a bit later on and moulding it to be inclusive, but also allowing the ones who are there to go ahead and go for it. We had a couple of partnerships where their partner wasn't there and we should have just perhaps quickly joined them up together or done something different. So that's in a way why we had a bit of a slow start for some of the groups. Vicky, what do you think?
Yes, I think it's very important. Julie and I were well matched because Julie has a strong work ethic and I do too. And I think that you have to, if you're going to do an asynchronous type project, that you have to be willing to be able to work evenings and early mornings like Julie and I did. I mean, I know most mornings of the flat classroom project, I was up at 5 a.m. checking in with Julie about the work they did while I was asleep, and vice versa. So you do have to have a good, strong work ethic, and you do have to stay on top of the groups. And I agree, Julie, that, you know, next time that those students that are absent, they're sick or whatever reason, to really juggle the groups a lot faster, like the first day, don't wait for a student to come back, but go ahead and move the groups around and don't hesitate to do that quickly. Because once we really took steps to move the groups around, then they started progressing. Otherwise, the student who's waiting for their other student to get there, you know, from around the world gets really frustrated and, you know, says, is anybody really there?
Yes.
Mm. And also, I think we need to build in more of a contingency plan for when the internet is not quite what I was going to do. But it was very panicky towards the end, particularly at our end. Our internet started to wobble, and we were trying to upload these videos and meet the perhaps get like that a bit more thought on. So, because there are things out of our control, you know, we can perhaps control our students and ourselves, but the whole telecommunications network is largely out of our control, so we can't always have these definite deadlines when things happen in the world. So,
oh, thank you for sharing those with us. Do you see the need for a course in our curriculum that would be like a global skills course or a virtual classroom course? You know, do you see it fitting in? And it seems that it's already part a little bit of your curriculum, but what do you think about that idea of having a whole course dedicated to these kinds of skills?
Sorry, Sharon, I think you're breaking up a little bit there. Are you talking about a course for teachers or for students?
For students.
Or both?
Well, for students. Right.
I think it's an excellent idea. I think I think it should be mandatory sometime in say over a 2-year period, if you're doing say a grade 9-10 course or a grade 11-12 course, sometime in that time there should be a global collaborative project, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there should be some sort of lead-in to that project where the students learn how to use the tools, but it needs to be interdisciplinary though. It needs to be we're all going to this room to learn how to be global in our collaborative project. It needs to
right.
be tied in with
right.
the curriculum that they're running now.
And real authentic learning projects, exactly. You know, I mentioned that because somebody mentioned Janet Barnstable, both in the chat room and earlier tonight, and I've actually got the great privilege of working with her this year on a web design project. And I've admired her for years, but she has been one of the pioneers in global collaborative projects. In fact, she along with AT&T, was the teacher who hosted the very first CU See Me video conference between a class in the States and one in Dublin back in 1994. And she has some amazing stories. She's really a great lady and a great pioneer. But she persuaded her school that they need a virtual classroom whole dedicated course. So she's been teaching it for years, since I think the late 90s. She's had a virtual classroom course in which she does these authentic projects with partners around the world. And wow, I look at that and think, we all need that. Why don't we have that? Why hasn't that idea caught on? But perhaps with Friedman's book and with this emphasis that we're seeing on 21st century workforce skills and on the need for global collaborative communication and cooperation, maybe we'll finally see that trend going that way. And I really think Web 2.0 tools fit into that very nicely. We're coming out to the end of our program, the last few minutes, and I was wondering if we have any questions for Julie, Vicky, or any of us that are on board tonight. And I'm not looking at the chat room. Can anyone see or read any questions right now?
Well, I would like to ask Jen a question. Jen, are you there?
I am.
You know, we've kind of talked about it from a high school perspective, but my question is, what kind of global collaboration type skills or introduction needs to happen at the elementary level?
Well, I think the elementary level, basically the first thing that has to happen is the teacher needs to be trained, because if the right. teacher isn't trained, she's not going to train the kids or be an example to the kids. And that's the biggest thing, because once the teacher gets hooked and once the teacher gets a hold of the tools and knows how to use them, it's just going to, it's like with what you do with languages. If a child learns a language by the time they're six, they know it. And if a kindergartner like Kathy Shields does with her class, they're podcasting already. It's ingrained in their blood now. It's not going to be hard for them when they get to high school, because it wasn't a learned skill. It was just an accepted, part of their growing up. And so that's the biggest thing. I think the teachers need to be the ones that are the examples. Typing is very important. Learning to use a spreadsheet, learning to, be wise in filtering. But I think the best thing with the younger kids is it's fun for them, so it's not work. So when they get to high school and they're in your classes and they're suddenly having to do things for grades, it's going to be fun for them because they're used to it. And they're going to be the ones that are going to be helping the other kids who haven't been taught by teachers who, had enjoyed it and had taught them when they were so impressionable.
And we have a question for how to get involved, and I know, Jen, you can answer it from the elementary level, and then I'd like to interject from the higher school level, and Julie can as well. Tell about your projects. Where do they go to get in your projects, Jen?
Oh, me? Oh, yes. You can go to Tech. Sorry. I was reading something that Kathy Shields had just written to me. It's a www.technospudprojects, so it's TECHNOSPUD projects.com, and from there you can see the archives of the last 9 years if you want to see the projects that I put together, or if you click on calendar, you'll see the current projects. And I have 5 that are scheduled for the rest of this year. I thought I was going to have 2, and then I had 3, and then I had 4, so you're welcome. The only ones that that is not K through 6 is the Lucky Charms project, and that's a pre-K through 3rd grade only project. But I'd love to have you guys involved and come check them out. And they are fluff. They're fun. They're fluffy, but they get the teacher involved in having fun, and that filters down. So it's filtered fluff.
And Lisa, I'd like to answer your question, too. And I think right now, a lot of people are calling for some sort of matching database or some sort of way to do that. But right now, pretty much it's a grassroots effort, and teachers have to kind of watch for other teachers that have a common curricular interest, and which kind of leads into the question that Simon had about how you strike a balance between technology of a collaborative project with the content. And see, in our case, Simon, the technology was the content, so it's great for an IT-type project. Wouldn't you agree, Julie?
Yes, it's perfect, really, because you're doing it and talking about it.
So it really had a dual nature and just fit very, very well together. So you may want to start, you know, a project as the school looks at its entire curriculum. Start the project in the IT, you know, type curriculum, in the computer science or technology curriculum, you know, maybe at a younger grade, 9 or 10, and then, you know, 11 or 12, pull it in, say, in history and do some sort of, you know, tandem learning type approach, or do it in, you know, Spanish or a language or something like that after they already have the skill in place. What do you think about that, Julie?
Yes. It's one of the hardest things in a school is to really take on board these interdisciplinary projects, and where my school actually is an international baccalaureate school, and in the middle years program we're meant to be doing interdisciplinary projects, and it's such a challenge. And I know, as you say, Vicky, it's easier just to leave it with the IT class and to sort of, you know, talk about it with IT and do it with IT, etc. But I think the challenge for us all is to move it out of IT, perhaps, you know, as you say, use that as a starting point, get the IT integration or the IT specialist to do it, that as a starting point, but then to move it out as quickly as you can, move it. And I haven't really achieved this, I'm afraid. I still struggle with my teachers. Because everyone's at all different levels and they have their own comfort zones, and they don't want to move out of those comfort zones. And
I hear you.
We need to keep, but we need to keep talking about it and pushing it and just try encouraging and you know, looking at the different curriculum areas, you know, history, languages. Everything is appropriate. Could I just? Yes. Sorry. Go on.
Oh, I was going to say at my school. Go ahead. Go ahead, then I'll jump in.
Okay, go.
At our school, we don't have the luxury of having, we don't have the IT courses. Our computer studies courses were all integrated into our regular curricular courses. So my projects are all English literature based for the most part, and I do want to hype some of the portals that do exist for those people who are looking for matches, like Global SchoolNet does have a matching database, and I believe Virtual Classroom also has a matching database. In the Women of Web Chats wiki that we've posted, there's a list of other links. Julie mentioned iEARN. As well, Darren Kirapatwa is trying to start an initiative called Developing Expert Voices, and that's worth looking at as well. His blog post is there, and he and Chris Harbeck, and I don't see Chris here tonight, have started a wiki to that effect. And again, there's Teachers Without Borders that is also trying to establish links between or make partners between countries around the world. So there are the portals like that to look at and see if anything matches. And if not, it's also very good to start small with the relationships you have in your own social network. And I think the grassroots might have the more beneficial potential partnerships, because they're relationships you may already have, or people who know people, and that's a good way to start too.
Yes, could I just add here that there's a Clay Burrell in Korea, is an international teacher in Korea, who started the 1001 Flat World Tales or something like that on his wiki, and he's doing some great stuff there as an international collaborative project. Also, Vinnie Vropny from the US is running some workshops at the moment for Global Connection Workshops, and he has a blog posting. I'm just going to throw it in our chat line here. You might like to add it to your other. That's just a link to a blog posting that Vinnie's done recently about workshopping teachers for global connections, and he's doing some great work in his school. But it is just a matter of of supporting teachers, encouraging them, and even if the program is meant to be integrated, it's still, you know, helping teachers to find their level so that they feel comfortable embarking on these projects.
I agree, and it's just so encouraging to see all this stuff happening for those of us in particular, and I'm sure, Julie, you must be gratified, too, to see this finally, after so many years, taking off and seeing teachers started on their own and blogging about it and trying to teach other teachers about it. I would love to see it more in my school, and sometimes it just gets a little frustrating, as you say, to move those teachers out of their comfort zones and get them thinking to flatten their own walls of their classroom, and sometimes I've started to refer to it as school in a box. It seems that everyone wants to stay in that little comfort zone of school in a box rather than reaching out and making relationships with people outside their culture.
Well, and I'd like to interject one thing. I started off with wikis just because I wanted my kids to have the technology, but I've stuck with them for over a year now because they are the best collaborative learning tool that I have found, and they work with the research. Yes, it's technology, and yes, somebody hasn't, you know, researched wikis per se, but they have researched authentic assessment. They have researched collaborative learning and how that works. And so we just need to take these tools, and when you start using them with kids, they get excited, and they start. My AP English teacher now has a blog and a wiki because the students asked for it.
Wonderful.
So, the students can do this. Now, I think Jen had something she wanted to say, and I'm sure Julie wants to wrap up as well. Jen?
I just wanted to say that for those of you in the chat room and for those of you who are listening to this podcast, it can be very easy to think that if you're not collaborating on nationally or internationally, you're not doing what you could do. And sometimes you may just need to expand the walls of your classroom to include the class next door.
Absolutely.
And that is collaboration, too. So for those of you, like my goal this year, I have never hit 50 states. If I can get every single state in one of my projects, then I'm going to start worrying about, thinking about, going more international. But for right now, but I started one classroom at a time, and that's what you guys need to do. You just may need to open up your door, walk next door, and say, I'm thinking about doing a wiki, and would you do it with me with your next door neighbor and see what they want to do? So don't think that you have to, I love that Julie and Vicki got together. That maybe you're Vicki or maybe you're Julie is the teacher that's right next door to you. So don't get hung up that you have to go international at first.
And I would want to say that you would be dumb if you did international before you had done another class or before you had done the students with each other, because if you can't collaborate in your classroom, you're really asking for trouble trying to collaborate around the world.
Yes.
That's a wonderful point. And Julie, did you have something else you wanted to interject here?
Just to encourage people to look for partners as I totally agree, collaborate within your own school or within the school down the road before you start something from across the other side of the world, but to try and to introduce collaboration somehow into what you're doing, because it is really worth it from the student's point of view and from your point of view as well. It makes your whole teaching life much more interesting, and it just broadens everyone's horizons, and it's a very well worth educational pursuit.
Well, we're coming to the end of our show for the night, and I have to say it's been a great treat having Julie Lindsay with us. I hope we can have her again soon. It was so interesting to hear about how you put together your flat classroom wiki project and how the students really benefited from that. And the chat interaction, I don't know if you've been following it. It's been so rich again tonight. So I thank everyone that was following along in the chat room and offering up resources and comments. And I'm sure that chat will be made available to us most likely tomorrow. And I want to thank Kathy again for being our webcaster in the background. She's done a great job
job with streaming our audio for us tonight. And I want to thank Jeff Lebo and Dave Cornier from World Bridges for allowing us to use these great tools so that we can connect like this globally and learn from each other. I want to wish everyone a fantastic week and thank again those of you who joined us. And goodbye, everybody.
Yay!
Nice job.
Oh, fantastic. And is that post-show?
You didn't say the words.
What was the word?
Post-show?
Post-show. Post-show. I was afraid to. It was like, oh, are we there yet? Can I say it?
You did a very, very, very good job.
Oh, thank you. On so little sleep. How wonderful. No, I'm glad. It was great. It was a great show. I learned a lot.
Thank you, Julie.
Julie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, everyone.
Such
okay,
a pleasure.
Great show. Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. It sounds so easy. Everybody made it sound so easy. Simon, you can do it. It's going to be easy for you.
Can he hear us, though? I don't know if he can hear us anymore.
Oh, I don't know. Kathy, are you done screening?